plunges. GatorGood.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we'll have an interview with John Zogby, who's going to be speaking in St. Petersburg next week as part of the St. Petersburg Conference on World Affairs at USF St. Petersburg. And then later on, we'll hear a talk by David K. Johnston. But first, we've got to wrap up some business from the
True Talk
from pitching in summers back. And
well, we have wonderful people, Rob. Somebody who is anonymous from St. Pete, they gave us $100, and that's for True Talk. And Christy Smith from Port Charlotte gave me $300.
Wow.
For True Talk. Thank you, Christy. Really appreciated. So that's like a total of $400. And then we have anonymous in Indian Rocks Beach, Florida, $50, and $150 for also from Thonotosasa. What is that?
Yeah, Thonotosasa.
Oh gosh, I can't pronounce it. Thonotosasa. Thank you so much. We love your support for Democracy Now! And True Talk. $150. We have Anonymous from Tampa who just gave $100. Thank you for the community radio and the diversity and love for all. Maureen Weiss from Pinellas Park, $100, loves True Talk, already a Circle of Friends member, but wanted to support the show. Thank you so much, Maureen. This is very, very nice of you to end on this note. I hope we have come close to our goal. If not, you can always go to WMNF.org and give WMNF. Thank you so much, Rob, for giving me this lifetime chance when you decided to have me co-host this show.
Well, we're proud to have you. Thanks, Summer.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay.
Good luck.
Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. John Zogby is the founder of the Zogby Poll and the Zogby Companies. And he's going to be at the St. Petersburg Conference on World Affairs on the USF St. Petersburg campus. Zogby is an internationally respected pollster whose polling remains among the most accurate through the past five elections. He's served as an on-air election analyst for NBC News, the BBC, and the CBC, and he joins us live right now. John Zogby, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. So, John, I want to ask you, I mean, you pay attention to public opinion. I think a lot of people are wondering these days, what is the public opinion about guns? Have you looked at the, you know, whether or not people would support a ban on the sale of weapons like AR-15s or more gun control, or is the public pretty much against any more gun control?
You know, I'm going to try to make a complicated issue very simple. Overall, in terms of gun control, either a solid plurality or a slight majority favor gun control. My business, though, doesn't only deal with pluralities and majorities, it deals with intensities. And most of the time, the high intensity is on the gun rights side of things. And that changes only when there are horrible tragedies, as we had just a couple of days ago in Florida. No one has measured anything right now, but I suspect, given what happens after these kinds of terrible events, the intensity shifts then to the gun control side, but then that tends to dissipate after as time passes. In terms of the specifics of your question, yes, they favor closing loopholes at gun shows. Yes, they favor limited kinds of gun control. Solid majorities do. And it's always been baffling to me as to why those substantial majorities have never been able to enact, you know, closing some of these loopholes or marking ammunition or limiting sales to certain kinds of people.
So does intensity go to the question of who's willing to show up at the polls, make campaign contributions, volunteer for campaigns, get involved politically? Is that what intensity goes to?
It does. The high-intensity vote is the person whose boots and raincoat is hanging by the door every day, ready to vote in a monsoon. And, you know, the one of the most famous bumper stickers of all times, right? I'm NRA and I vote. That's become kind of a cliche gun rights organizations are always high intensity and always ready to vote. Although my polling does show that NRA members also favor closing some of these loopholes as well.
Let me switch to the president for a little bit. You wrote a few days ago that Donald Trump was the first president to see his poll ratings drop in his first 100 days. And you say that historically we really haven't seen too many examples of a president whose numbers, in at least in the first year, have you know, the president's average approval rating of 39% is the lowest after a full year. That's pretty unusual. Is that right?
It's very unusual. You know, generally a president in 100 days gets a honeymoon from the public as well as the press. That was squandered. We saw a man that was elected with 46% of the vote, which, you know, is pretty rare itself. 46% of the vote and then go down to 36-37% support. And all in the first year, a very, very unique situation. What we do see, however, is the president kind of in a bounce back in the last couple of weeks and hovering around 42-43%, hardly a renaissance, but his numbers are stronger, and the intensity of his support is fairly high, so he is a factor.
So if the president won with 46% of the support of the American public, and right now he's only in the low 40s, he could get reelected, I would say.
Get reelected. Yep, to be sure. All depends, obviously, you know, who he runs against. It also depends what the, you know, the circumstances on the ground are. And as we learned in 2016, how intense the support is for the Democratic candidate. That was the difficulty that Hillary Clinton faced, which was there was a low intensity, particularly among younger African-American voters who came out in very large numbers for Barack Obama. But we did see it across the Obama coalition. The Obama coalition, which was very strong in 08 and 2012, not so strong in 2016. So we've got to see, is the economy going to be good in 2020? Are people's paychecks going to be a little bit higher by the 2020 election cycle? And then is the Democratic Party going to be in shape with one solid candidate that can energize its base?
Well, our guest is John Zogby, founder of the Zogby Poll. He's one of the most respected pollsters in the U.S., and he'll be taking part in the upcoming USF St. Petersburg Conference on World Affairs. It begins this coming Tuesday, goes through Friday, February 23rd, on the USF St. Petersburg campus. And John Zogby will be one of the speakers. John, I think a lot of people wonder how pollsters do it these days with so few people having landlines. Have pollsters solved that problem? Because I know I never pick up my cell phone. If I don't know the incoming number from which I'm being called, I don't pick up my cell phone. How do you guys deal with that problem?
We still can do polls and still do good ones. And in fact, one of the things I'm going to talk about in St. Pete is the fact that the polls actually were pretty good in 2016. Some of us had foresight and anticipated not only the decline of the landline, but also the decline of telephone sociability and the lack of willingness to, you know, to answer calls from strangers. And so we moved online or incorporated some cell phones into our work. Fact of the matter is the response rates are dismal. You know, when I started, 2 out of 3 people that reached on the phone were willing to take a poll. That was 1984. Imagine today in some metro areas, you're lucky to get a 5 or 6% response rate, an average nationwide at the height of an election of 15% response rate. But it means it takes many more dials to get your sample, but we can still get the sample.
And still calling people is the way you do it. You call them and they do pick up their phone eventually. Somebody does.
Yep. Most of our work is done online, though, from a very large sample of cleaned emails of people who have taken surveys before and have shown a willingness to take a survey, then we will take a random sampling nationwide of that substantial base of emails and invite them.
Well, John Zogby will be in St. Petersburg this coming week as part of the Conference on World Affairs that takes place annually in St. Pete. One more question, John, and I won't ask you to tell us all 11, but your last book is that We Are Many, We Are One, Neo-Tribes and the Tribal Analytics in the 21st uh-huh. Century. And you say that there are 11 tribes in modern America, that, uh-huh. that it's more useful to look at people as tribes as opposed to looking at the demographic breakdown. Is that right?
That's correct. 9 years of research has gone into this, and basically we are more than our demographics or where we're from. We are based on attributes and values and aspirations. And so we have the God Squad, who are defined by their faith. We have the Persistents, who in some way have survived and triumphed over a personal tragedy in our lives. There are the happy hedonists, who are defined by fun and seeking adventure. There are the creators, who are the artists, the entrepreneurs. And then there is a tribe we call the go with the flow, who seek zen and moderation and balance. And the thing I love about this group more than anything else is that exactly half are men and half are women.
Well, John, thanks a lot. I'm out of time, but thank you so much for coming on WMNF and giving us a glimpse of what you're going to be presenting this week at the conference in St. Petersburg.
Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, John. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's John Zogby, who's an internationally respected pollster. He'll be among the many speakers who will be taking part in the USF St. Petersburg Conference on World Affairs on the St. Pete USF campus. It begins this coming Tuesday and goes through Friday. For more information, you can find the entire list of speakers at stpetersburgintheworld.com. And to find out more about how to get involved, you can send an email to info@stpetersburgintheworld.com. Well, you are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We want to thank a bunch of people. Thanks to Hester Walcott from Tampa, who just made a $60 contribution. Hester, thanks a lot. And Hester says that there was some drumming music about 10:55 a.m. I heard that, too. I'm not sure what that was. She says, I was making my pledge and couldn't listen. Oh, all right. And then thanks to Piotr Edelman from Tampa, just made a $50 contribution. Piotr, thank you very much for that nice contribution. And thanks to Joanne Lentino. Joanne, thanks a lot. And taking tickets to see Chuck Prophet at the Mission Express this Wednesday. We'll put you on the guest list. Joanne, great to hear from you. And she has just made, Sean, a $1,000 donation. Wow. Joanne, thank you so much for that nice contribution. So that really helps us a lot. And Sean, any word? We're trying to raise $11,200 in these 4 hours of public affairs today. Any idea where we stand right now?
You know, I know at one point Samar had raised $2,000 in her hour. And then she got that extra $1,000 donation that you just read and some more. So I think that she came close to her $4,000 goal for that 1 hour. And we are still waiting to hear from you if you support Radioactivity and the great interview that Rob just did, a very timely interview. Give us a call if you support that, 813-239-9663.
All right. We're going to hear a really terrific speech right now by David K. Johnston about the age of mendacity, the age of Trump. David K. Johnston is the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who used to work for the New York Times. Now he teaches tax law at, I believe, Syracuse University. And we're going to hear his talk that he gave just a few days ago in Seattle about his new book on Donald Trump. He has been covering Donald Trump for more than 30 years. And we're going to hear that speech right now.
You know, posting notes on the internet doesn't do anything. It may make you feel good, but it doesn't change anything. And we have the votes. And it's clear that there are plenty of Americans, more than enough, to change Congress. And why do you need to change Congress? Because the Republicans will never deal with Donald Trump. Now, Robert Mueller's report, when it comes out, I can tell you broadly what it's going to show for my 30 years of knowing Donald. He's a tax cheat. He was tried twice, civilly, for tax fraud. Totally lost the cases.
That's David K. Johnston, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features David K. Johnston on Trump, the Age of Mendacity. An ultra-rich New York real estate tycoon and celebrity TV star is the 45th president of the United States. He puts America first by ignoring the world and pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, undermining the Iran deal, and recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. He drains the swamp by appointing people with dubious credentials. His economic policies are lining the pockets of the wealthy. His daughter and son-in-law occupy high positions in his administration. Can anyone say nepotism? Then there's the lying. Do politicians tell lies? Of course they do. But the current occupant of the White House is setting new records. The Washington Post has documented more than 2,000 lies in his first year in office. The self-described genius has a penchant for mendacity. His core group of supporters comment, "That's just Donald being Donald." What can you say? Our guest today is David K. Johnston. He's been following Donald Trump since the late 1980s. He won the Pulitzer Prize while reporting for the New York Times. He's the author of many books, including It's Even Worse Than You Think. He spoke in Seattle. And now, David K. Johnston.
It is substance with Donald Trump that you should care about. Not so much his tweets, his whose button is bigger nonsense, even his racism, as what he is doing to our government, as our employee, as our subordinate. I call him Donald, and I have people all the time, they go, "Why don't you call him Mr. President?" And I go, "Because I know him, and because we're equals. We've just temporarily imbued him with the power to act on our behalf. But he's not a king, he's not special, nor is Barack Obama or Jimmy Carter or anybody else. The President of the United States is our employee, and we're his boss, and we own our government, and we ought to act like owners." Well, your ownership interests are being damaged. Because what has happened is Donald, who really literally doesn't know anything, when he came into office, brought with him really awful people. Now, the ancient Greeks, and I used to teach at Syracuse Law and its graduate business school, the law of the ancient world. I taught the property law, property and tax law one semester, and the business regulation law the other. And one of the things my students learned in both courses was that the ancient Greeks had a name for a government run by the worst of us, the least qualified, the most venal, the least caring about their fellow man. They called it a kakistocracy. And it has sort of a nice tone to it, you know, kakistocracy. And so who did Trump bring in with him? Well, you can see some of these people all the time. There's Stephen Miller, who, you know, his high school graduation speech in Santa Monica was a racist diatribe. He was mentored by Richard Spencer from not that far from here in Whitefish, Montana. He brought in Steve Bannon, who says, "I'm a Leninist," by which he means I want to destroy the existing order. And that's what they're working on doing. For example, housing and urban development. Tens of billions of dollars of your tax dollars every year. In many cases, frankly, not very well spent, not very thoughtfully spent. But the guy who's the head of the agency, I kid you not, he has said this publicly, he believes that the pyramids at Giza are granaries. They're not tombs, they're granaries. And this guy's in charge of housing and urban development. Betsy DeVos, heiress, marries an heir, huge fortune. I will say this, when she travels around the country in her private jet, at least she doesn't bill us. But has never attended a public school, but is a huge believer in the benefits of corporate and religious education. Anybody, if you want to ask about the charter school movement and say, "Well, let's talk about Detroit," they'll be like, "Could we talk about anything else, the end of the world?" Because the Detroit setup, which she was deeply involved in, is just a disaster. She is confronted with the problem of student loans. Now, for most of this audience like me, when we went to college, we didn't need student loans. College was free. At least if you went in California, it was completely free. And a lot of other places, it was so cheap, it was irrelevant. You could just get a summer job and pay for school. We now have over $1 trillion of student debt, and a lot of it at these creepy, not very good, for-profit commercial colleges. So Betsy DeVos says, we're going to fix this problem. So who does she bring in? Lobbyists from the companies that made the loans that caused the problem. By the way, she's an investor in a debt collection company, too. Student loan debt collection. Now, it's an irrelevant amount of money to her multi-billion dollar fortune, but the symbolism is pretty awful. When Trump came in, he fired every ambassador. Now, legally, he can do that. He has a right to do it. Of course, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should, or as the Mormons like to say, he who must be commanded in all things is a slothful and unwise servant. And Donald didn't have anybody to replace these people. So he goes around saying, terrorism, we have to be alert for the terrorists. But we don't have an ambassador in Egypt or Jordan or Saudi Arabia or Libya. And in countries like Australia, the most lapdog loyal supporter of America, we don't have an ambassador either, which means when there are important commercial deals being discussed, we're not at the table. How many people in this room have ever heard of the RCEP? Couple of people. This is really important to the lives of your, maybe not yours, but certainly your children, grandchildren, and other heirs. Donald ran for president attacking the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If any journalist had said, well, tell us exactly what it is. Well, you know, it's trade, and it's like big. It's big. It's like it's soap, it's Pacific, and it's, you know, really big. I was a critic of the TPP. I was one of the leading critics of it because it needed to be fixed. It added monopoly powers. It added corporate powers. It diminished human powers. All fixable problems. Donald kills it. He doesn't replace it with anything. He doesn't know anything about trade. So what does President Xi do? He begins promoting his plan, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Instead of 12 countries in the Pacific, excluding China, that was the TPP, because partly it was designed to contain China's economic, military, and political ambitions, this is 15 Pacific Rim countries, plus India, but not us. And what are the trade emissaries from China telling these countries? Well, when I was in Australia in the fall to lecture, everybody I talked to, government officials, academics, business people, journalists, the chambermaid who made up my room, they were all like, well, you know, we're going to have to get closer to China and pay more attention to China because that's the only option. Nobody has done more to help China increase its power and authority in the world than Donald Trump. And the Chinese emissaries, they go around saying, listen, you need to tilt away from Washington. Quit pivoting to them. Pivot to us. You want to be wealthy in the future? Look at our highways. Look at our airports. Look at our infrastructure. Look at the people we're employing. Look at the wealth we're creating. That country? That country? Its railroads are falling apart. Its buildings leak. They're not fixing anything. And look who's in the White House. And they're succeeding because you have no choice, to quote Donald. If you want to have a trade partnership, that's what you've got to do. Last summer, Donald went to Poland, and he gave a speech. And he was surrounded by adoring people because the right-wing government of Poland made sure that anybody who wasn't part of their ruling party was kept many blocks away, and anybody with a TV camera who tried to go see the protesters many blocks away got stopped. Make sure there was no negative coverage. And Donald gets up and says, oh, it's so wonderful how you people love me. Because, of course, we created the presidency to adore the president, right? At the very day he's doing this, at the very moment he's doing this, Shinzo Abe is in Brussels signing a Japanese-European Union trade deal. So we got two major trade partnerships going on in the world, and we're not involved in it at all. And what does Donald do? I'm going to kill NAFTA. There are problems with NAFTA. There are things we got to fix with NAFTA. But that's not his answer. And I want to get Mexico to cooperate, so I'm going to make them pay for a wall, please. Veterans. Donald says, I love veterans. Now, I pay a lot of attention to that. My dad was 100% disabled veteran of World War II. You can imagine the economic circumstances that I grew up in as a result were sort of less than terrific. Donald goes around saying, we're going to take care of the vets. I'm all for the vets. So his first budget proposes that for many disabled vets who are getting $35,000 a year, not exactly a fortune, when they reach normal retirement age, they will be cut to $13,000 a year. Now, it hasn't happened, and it's not going to happen. But the point is, someone who's for the vets would never propose that. Donald Trump tells you, I love the cops. You know, they're so important. The police, you know, the Democrats didn't like the police. I'm so for the police. So what does the new tax bill do? Well, it eliminated miscellaneous deductions. So police officers and firefighters and EMTs and other uniformed personnel who had to buy a uniform and had to dry clean their uniforms, and in the case of cops, had to usually buy their own guns and bullets, they no longer get to deduct that. Tell me how this is showing, you know, your love and affection for the cops. Now, about what's happening to our government, about how Trump's team, not Donald personally, because he's lazy, he spends 5 hours a day on the job of being president, an hour of that's having lunch, they have loosed into our government what I call political termites. And I call them that because, unseen by the public, these people are eating away at the structure of our government. They are taking the investment that you have made after years and years and years in the State Department, in climate science, in controlling polluters, in improving public health, in running the FBI, and they are forcing out the people who are competent and diligent and know what they're doing, unless they toe the line that, you know, as Donald said today, on climate change, well, you know, it's getting hotter and colder. And there's record ice in the Arctic. It was record lost ice in the Arctic. And this isn't what's being covered. And this stuff matters. Donald's crazy tweets, you know, they may be insulting. They're certainly entertaining. But it's what's happening to our government that is going to affect your pocketbook, the RCEP, as an example. They're going to affect maybe not you and I in terms of getting asthma or heart disease or cancer from how the companies that produce toxics have been freed up to dump their stuff instead of clean it up like they used to or segregate it. But if you have grandchildren or great-grandchildren, they're going to be affected, and they're going to be affected even if Donald's out of office next week because it'll take a long time to repair these things. The Trump administration stopped posting information about workers dying on the job. 4,800 people a year die at work in this country from something doing with their job. And the fines are so minor that there actually are some awful employers who just as soon pay the fine than go to safe practices. So shaming these people was a project, particularly in the last administration. Well, they stopped posting the notices about these deaths. We reported about that at dcreport.org, singular, dcreport.org, which is a nonprofit news service my friends and I started. It's mostly volunteer. We don't sell your name. We don't have ads. It's public service. And they then started putting them back up for a while. I can't prove the cause and effect. I can only tell you the timeline. But this administration has not posted information on the death of an American worker on the job since August 17th. And I have no reason to believe they're going to post anymore. They don't care. If anything, it's this is improper for government to do these things.
Well, that's David K. Johnston, who is we're listening to a speech that he gave just a few days ago in Seattle, Washington. He's talking about his new book on Donald Trump. David K. Johnston is the Pulitzer Prize-winning tax reporter who's also covered Donald Trump since the late 1980s. And he appears, Johnston has appeared on Democracy Now! Several times and also on Radioactivity many times. So we're going to try to get some people to make a contribution to help us stay on the air. If you want to get a copy of this talk, it's an hour-long talk. You can have it for a donation of $80. Here's the number to call, 813-239-9663. We're hoping this hour to raise $2,000, and we've got a challenge. We've got a $500 challenge from a great listener who was willing to give us $500 if we can get five $100 donations this hour. So let's see if we can do that. That's John DeYoung who made that challenge. So please call us up at 813-239-9663 if you like Radioactivity, if you like hearing of speakers like David K. Johnston, and if you like all the other topics that end up being on the show. I hope you call right now. 813-239-9663. Sean Kanan is here. We've got, we're going to go back to the speech in about 2 minutes. We're waiting. We haven't had a call yet for Radioactivity. So let's see if we can get one phone call right now at 813-239-9663.
We really need to hear from you if you are a supporter of Radioactivity. It's been a while since we've gotten a donation, but we know that there's support out there for Radioactivity. It's such a great program with the David K. Johnston speech. We can offer you for an $80 contribution on CD. We also can give you that thumb drive of Pacifica Radio broadcast for a $150 contribution, but we need to hear from you by calling 813-239-9663, or you can donate on the web at WMNF.org. Your donation will be secure. It's a secure website. You can also donate on our secure phone app, which is the WMNF app, which you hopefully have already downloaded onto your phone or your device. And if you'd like to reach out and touch one of our volunteers, you can give us a call the old-fashioned way, 813-239-9663.
And our website is secure, WMNF.org. You can make a donation there. We just ask a few questions, like what your name is and your address and what your favorite shows are, how you'd like to, how much you'd like to donate and how you'd like to pay for it. And you can be on your way. It takes just a few minutes, 2 minutes. To make that contribution online. Sean, I'm a little bit concerned because on Radioactivity, you know, we've had a lot of great speakers like we've had David K. Johnston, the Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. We've had the biographer of Bob Marley. Roger Steffens was here a few weeks ago.
That was so good.
We've had the Florida League of Women Voters, most recently talking about common sense gun legislation. Vice President Joe Biden was here just before the 2016 election. Richard Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, was a guest on this show. John Kapua, who wrote a new book about Florida R&B, he was here in the studios. We were playing some of that great music in the book and also talking about some of the lesser-known R&B stars and some of the monster R&B stars from Florida. Laura Riley, the food critic for the Tampa Bay Times, has been here. Former Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, the chief of staff to Colin Powell. These are just some of the guests that we've had over the past few months and years. But if you enjoy listening to the interviews that I do, be the first one to call right now at 813-239-9663. We're not getting any phone calls. There's got to be one person out there who enjoys listening to the interviews. We're going to go back and hear more of the speech right now from David K. Johnston. And you can get the speech for an $80 contribution. And we've got a challenge, and that is we've got a kind listener from Tampa who will match the next five $100 donations. If you donate $100 or more, John will give an extra $100 for your donation. 813-239-9663. Here's more of David K. Johnston.
We don't have to put up with this. That's the important message. How did this happen, and what do we do about it? Those are the questions to ask. And how did Donald Trump become president? The American people put him there. We chose. And he lost the popular vote, even though he insists he really won it. It was all those illegals. But he won the Electoral College. So the whole idea of this country is that we choose. We decide our fate. King George doesn't decide our fate. Somebody else doesn't. We do. But we've, many of us, stopped choosing. I have sat in blue-collar bars in Indiana and Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin, where I don't go dressed like this. I go dressed like I'm a blue-collar guy. And some event will happen on the screen. And I don't follow sports. I'm of the school that if Marx had been born 100 years later, he would have said commercial sports are the opium of the masses. But some play occurs, and suddenly the room is alive, and everybody's picking it apart, and people will, they'll cite, you know, Major League Baseball rule number whatever, and by memory tell you what it says. I was once in a bar where somebody argued that, and the bartender pulls out the rule book from behind the bar and says, no, Jake's right. I mean, it's incredible analytical skill. Then you ask a question about politics. I don't want to do it. Dirty. Don't want anything to do with it. You know, that's nothing. Well, that's how you get Donald Trump in the White House. Not having young people be involved. How many people, raise your hand in this room, are under 30? Well, that's more than I usually get. Okay? And I encourage you, the next time you come to an Elliott Bay Books event about matters of politics and economics, bring somebody who's younger. You know, bring somebody, kid from down the street, college student, you know. You know, if you don't have a grandchildren or children of your own here, somebody's. But bring young people. Get them to come. Put up the $5 for them. But people in America, we know very little. We don't pay attention to politics. And we don't do it because, of course, that's what we've been trained to do. What's one of the sayings? You can't fight City Hall. Sure you can. I've written about people my whole life who've done it. Well, I don't have any power. Nonsense. You have the vote. The social research shows that if everybody voted, if we had mandatory voting like the Australians do, we would have a totally different Congress. People like Paul Ryan would not have a shot. Because this country, in many ways, is much more socially advanced and economically concerned about the same things the Europeans are, taking away financial shocks from people so they can have decent lives. But a lot of people don't vote. Or as my best friend, who is basically a socialist at heart, Wall Street Journal editor, my best friend always likes to say, screw the poor. The poor get screwed because they don't vote. You go tell them, if you'd vote, you wouldn't get screwed. And they say, no, I'm not going to vote. Screw the poor. That's our policy in America. And we've done it to middle class people and working class people. You know, the average income of the bottom 90% of Americans in 1967, that's the year I finished high school, was higher than in 2012. The bottom 90% of people in America are ticked off, a lot of them, and with good reason. You drive across this country and you can go into little towns all over Nebraska and Kansas and parts of Minnesota, and you'll find that, you know, all sorts of people tweaking on meth. No jobs, places falling apart. We don't have to have it that way. We chose to do this. Some of us chose by not being involved. Some of us chose by electing politicians. But whatever the conditions are in this country, there is one absolute to them. We chose. Nobody forced us to elect the people who are in office. No foreign potentate came and said, you have to be this way. We chose. People turned to Donald Trump because he took the message in my trilogy, free lunch, about subsidies, perfectly legal about taxes, and the fine print about monopolies, and distilled from it the basic message. And I said in 2012, anybody who runs for president on the basic message in these books is going to get elected. And that message was, Washington has been taking care of the rich and powerful, and in many, many ways they have passed laws and rules you've never heard of unless you read my books, where they subtly take money out of your pocket and redistribute it to people at the top. And if I could get people to read these books and to understand the mechanisms by which, without even your realizing it, every single day, Warren Buffett has his hand in your pocket. The pipeline companies have their hands in your pocket. The cable television companies and the pharmacy companies and the land title companies have their hand in your pocket through laws and rules that, except for the people who benefited from them, nobody knew about. They'll get elected president. And Donald, who I know watched me on TV, distilled the essence of that message. Drain the swamp. And so what did he do once he got in office? Well, he took the swamp and turned it into a federally protected paradise for swamp monsters. He ran against Goldman Sachs. He brought six people from Goldman Sachs into his administration. Did the exact opposite of what he said. So what do we do about this? Well, the most important thing that's going to happen in the history of America since the Civil War will occur in this country in November. If we keep the Congress we have, Donald Trump will do just fine. He may get a second term. Despite all the polls, he might get a second term. What have the Republicans told us? I mean, they're crystal clear about what's going on. They will destroy the FBI to protect Donald Trump. Now, I've written lots of things negative about the FBI and political spying, and I've exposed foreign agents and written about a lot of corrupt police activities. But at the end of the day, most of the people in the FBI are really trying hard to do a good job. Oh, no. There's a cabal. You know, they're with Hillary. And yet the man in the White House is deeply involved with a foreign power. I mean, you imagine when you were in high school, to those of you in the audience who are my age or older, if you went to high school in the 40s, 50s, or 60s, can you imagine if you'd had a high school civics teacher who said, the day is going to come when there'll be a Republican president who will praise the leader in the Kremlin, he will denounce the FBI, the CIA, and all the other American intelligence agencies, and the Republicans in Congress will take his side and back him up. Now, I don't know about you, but I would have gone to the principal's office and said, Mr. Jones needs to be seen by a psychiatrist. But that's where we are. What matters is who turns out to vote in this next election. Gerrymandering, which is how the minority party, the Republican Party, and I'm a registered Republican of many, many years standing, manages to be in control, is based on some simple math that you can overcome. You create districts that are 53, 54, if you have to, 55% your party, and then you take everybody you think isn't with you, and you corral them over here in districts that are 70, 80, and at least one case that I know of, almost 90% Democrats, or people you think will vote with the Democrats. Well, you can defeat a district that's 53 or 54 or 55%. You just turn out the vote. Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin. Remember he had a recall a couple of years ago? He didn't get recalled. The polling data indicated he could have been recalled. You know why he didn't get recalled? Because the brilliant political strategist from the Democratic Party and the unions decided they were going to try and outspend the Koch brothers on TV ads. You can't outspend the Koch brothers on. Had they instead gone to people and said, hey, Joe or Mary, I know you're out of work. We want you to come to the polls, 5 o'clock, election day, bring your car. We're going to put somebody else in the car with you. We're going to fill your gas tank. At the end of the day, we're going to give you a couple $100 and fill your gas tank again, and we want you to drive people to the polls. They would have spent 10% as much money, and they would have gotten him out. You got to get people to vote. Now, if you live in a district where it doesn't matter, either you like your congressperson and you think they're going to deal with Trump appropriately, or you live in a district where there's no possibility of replacing that congressperson, get in your car and drive to another congressional district. Call there, contact people there in advance, and work on that district and make change. Yet, if you can't go do it, get your Aunt Sally or your nephew Jack or your next door neighbor to go do it. But don't just gripe. You know, posting notes on the internet doesn't do anything. It may make you feel good, but it doesn't change anything. And we have the votes. And it's clear that there are plenty of Americans, more than enough, to change Congress. And why do you need to change Congress? Because the Republicans will never deal with Donald Trump. Now, Robert Mueller's report, when it comes out, I can tell you broadly what it's going to show from my 30 years of knowing Donald. He's a tax cheat. He was tried twice, civilly, for tax fraud. Totally lost the cases. Had no defensible conduct. One of the questions I've asked recently is, gee, did he have the audacity to take a deduction for paying off Stormy Daniels? And Stormy Daniels and the Playboy Playmate, I assure you, are not the only ones out there. He's been doing money laundering for the Russians for years. He's done all sorts of things, deals with the Russians, that make no economic sense. When he sold the disgusting mansion that was torn down a few miles from Mar-a-Lago to Dmitry Ribolovlev, the cover story was Ribolovlev was hiding assets from his wife. Now, you should think about this for a minute. You're wealthy, you're having a horrible divorce with your spouse, and you want to hide money. So, of course, you're going to immediately go out and pay twice what something is worth. Yeah. And if you want to throw your money away, that makes sense. But Vladimir Putin was investing in Donald Trump the same way venture capitalists do. You invest in 100 potential successes, 95 of them lose every penny you put into them. Four of them make up for the 95. And then you get a grand slam home run like Alphabet or Amazon. The Kremlin got Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not a loyal American. And if you doubt that, go home, look up the email that Rob Goldstone sent to Don Trump Jr. in June of 2016 and read the fourth paragraph. As part of Russia's efforts to help. Now that's not a, hey, we'd like to help you, would you be interested email. That's a, we're already in business together, we got a new investment opportunity email. And this is an email that a month after it was sent, Don Jr. said didn't exist. Jake Tapper asked him about it on CNN. That when the New York Times sussed this out finally a year later and Don Jr. put it out, after that, the Trump White House and Don Jr. told six different stories, none of which can be true, all of which are incompatible with each other, one of which was dictated by the President of the United States on Air Force One coming back from Paris, and all of which show a conspiracy between Donald Trump and the Kremlin. And why people are not in the streets over this is astonishing to me. It's because Donald is masterful at saying, first of all, collusion. I don't care about collusion. First of all, collusion is not a crime. It's a conspiracy by a foreign power to put its guy in the White House in which he was a willing participant. Mueller's report's going to be really devastating. But without public hearings, the public isn't going to be ready for it. When Watergate happened, it was dismissed for a long time as... And then we had Sam Ervin, a senator from North Carolina, nice old country lawyer Sam Ervin, who suddenly realized he was going to be in the history books, and by golly, his grandchildren are not going to read anything about him except that he was an American hero and patriot. And those hearings went on night, day, well, most of us watched them at night on PBS, but day after day after day after day, and bit by bit, people began to learn what was going on in the Nixon White House. And at the end of the day, the difference between Donald Trump and Richard Nixon is real simple. Richard Nixon's a patriot. He's a crook and he's paranoid. He made lots of bad decisions and he deserved to be pushed out of office. But at the end of the day, he did the patriotic thing. He resigned as president. Donald Trump is pushed out of office. I'll tell you what he's going to do. He will travel the country for the rest of his life doing on a bigger scale what he did during the campaign. Beat that person up. I'll pay your legal bills. He's trying to get votes and he says this. Now imagine he's out of office what he'll say. He will foment violence and revolution. And I have written for almost 50 years now about people who literally believe, I've been to their conventions, that the government of the United States is a criminal organization, needs to be overthrown. There are books they write about it, there are meetings they have, there are fringe groups, but boy, Donald will, he'll be right in there with them. You have the power to do something. The first thing you have to do is get informed so that you know what they're doing. Not just what he's tweeting, not just his crazy racist statements, not just his flip-flops because he has no principles of any kind except the adoration and the glorification of the world's smartest, greatest memory, Donald Trump. You know, a man who says that he can learn everything you need to know about nuclear missiles in 90 minutes. And who also says he's one of the world's leading experts on a subject on which I am recognized around the world as an expert, tax policy. A subject in which he says, I know nothing of accounting. Well, if you don't know any of accounting, that's like saying I'm the world's greatest pilot, but I don't know what a wing is. They just don't go together. But people have to build a case. You can't just say, I don't like the guy. You got to also have a positive case. What am I going to do? We get rid of Donald Trump. Why are we going to do that? Why are we going to have somebody else? We're going to have somebody else because, hey, you know what? We want back the Clean Air and Water Act that Richard Nixon signed into law because a lot fewer of us have died from cancer and asthma and heart disease.
Well, this is a speech by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston. It's called The Age of Mendacity, The Age of Trump. And you can have this speech on CD for an $80 contribution to WMNF. As we try to fundraise here at WMNF and try to raise this morning and going into the 12 noon show, trying to raise $11,200. And I think we've raised just over $6,000, so we need another maybe $5,000 to go, and we will do really well. Now, a bunch of people have called in. Thanks to Stacy Isidro from Apollo Beach, made a $60 contribution. Likes news and Caribbean cruise. Thank you, Stacy. And thanks to Anonymous, is going to take the David K. Johnston speech. Thanks a lot, and good to hear from you. That's an $80 contribution. And Mark Brandt from Dunedin. Rob, Mark, thank you so much for your nice contribution of $100. And that means that we only need to hear from four more $100 contributions, Sean, and we will get an extra $500.
Well, that's great. We do need to hear from you if you can make a $100 donation or any size donation. Rick Bianchi from Parrish is increasing his circle of friends by $5 a month in order to get the Like Really Smart t-shirt. Thank you for that. Sharon from St. Petersburg is donating $20. Thanks, Sharon. James Whitmore from Plant City is getting the Like Really Smart t-shirt. He likes public affairs. He's donating $10 a month to the circle of friends. So there's an extra, there's a $100 donation. So that helps us to meet that match. Can you make a $100 donation right now? 813-238-8001. Or you can donate on our website, which is secure at WMNF.org.
All right, Sean, for this show, we've still got a big goal. We want to raise $2,000 while this show is on. And I think we've raised, how much do you think we've raised? About $1,000?
Yeah, in the last
segment. All right, so we've got about 4 or 5 minutes to go to raise an extra $1,000. If we get three more people to donate $100, then we will get an extra $500 from John DeYoung in Tampa. So he has issued a challenge. Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also pledge on our secure website, WMNF.org. For $150, you can have that great flash drive that includes Voices of Pacifica from the last 60 years, voices that changed the world. It includes speeches and interviews and documentaries with people like George Carlin, Woody Guthrie, Jessica Mitford, Sarah Vaughan, Bob Dylan, Edward Said, Dick Gregory, Studs Terkel, Tim Robbins, Dizzy Gillespie, Allen Ginsberg, Alfred Hitchcock, Betty Friedan, Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This flash drive has 1,350 hours of great programs from Pacifica from the past 60 years, and you can have it for a $150 donation. Here's the number to call, 813-239-9663. Sean, we're still about $1,000 away from reaching that goal.
Can you be a hero? Can you be one of the people that donates $100 right now so that it helps us get our match? Or maybe you would like to just donate $1,000 and that would put us over the goal for this hour? 813-239-9663. Maybe you can only donate $5 a month or $10 a month. That would be excellent as well. You can go make that donation at WMNF.org or on our smartphone app, WMNF app. Or you can call 813-239-9663. You can get a copy of the CD that we were hearing from David K. Johnston for an $80 pledge on CD. Or you can get the $150 donation. For a $150 donation, you can get the thumb drive with 1,350 hours of Pacifica programs called Voices That Changed the World. So much great music, so much great talk and interviews and speeches.
There are 50 talks by philosopher Alan Watts on this thumb drive. That alone is an incredible, if you're an Alan Watts fan and you love listening to Alan's soothing voice as he talks about Buddhism, make the contribution for $150 and that alone will keep you busy for hours and hours and hours. Well, we just have about 90 seconds to go, trying to raise $2,000 this hour. I think we've raised $1,000. We are $1,000 away. Now, we've got four lines lit up, so a lot of people are calling in, but we just need a few more people. And remember, that match is crucial. Mm-hmm. If we get the match, we will be just $200 short. So please call us up at 813-238-8001. And if you make a $100 donation or more in the next few minutes, your donation will be doubled. At least the $100 portion of it will be doubled by a great, generous challenge pledge from Tampa. 813-239-9663.
or you can donate at WMNF.org. Do you appreciate the Radioactivity Show that comes on every morning at 11, every weekday morning at 11? Rob brings you interviews from around the city, around the state, around the country, and around the world. It really is a great interview program. It is only possible because of your support. Please call 813-239-9663 and make a financial contribution to keep community radio alive in the Tampa Bay area.
Remember, we still need $300 donations, so we'll get that match. And you can make your donation on our secure website. It's WMNF.org. Will we make it? That's the big question. 813-239-9663. This is WMNF in Tampa. Daniel Ruth is coming up next.